Welcome to the Drop-In CEO podcast. I'm Deb Cobiello, and as the Drop-In CEO, I drop into businesses and assume the CEO role to mitigate crises and help teams get back on track. This podcast is about helping the C-suite leader to navigate challenges with confidence. For today's leader, I'm here to help you get back on track. Tomorrow's leader, let me partner with you to learn the secrets of the C-suite. Wherever you're at in your career, this is the podcast for you. Hello, I am Deb Cobiello, founder of The Drop-In CEO, and I am so grateful you've joined us for another episode of the podcast where week after week, I speak to amazing leaders and share their insights with you and hopefully inspire you. And if you like this episode, please subscribe, rate, review, tell others who you think this will be a valuable resource so we can continue to bring you great programming. And on a personal note, I do this because I sincerely care about the C-suite leader of today and tomorrow to navigate challenges with confidence. And now I am honored to share the mic with my fantastic guest, Jacobo Capuano. He is a proven strategic thinker and creative change agent and has the ability to drive agile continuous improvement across end-to-end supply chain by using Lean Six Sigma techniques. And he is passionate about developing long-term talent and mentoring individuals to create high-performance teams. And he brings more than 30 years of experience in end-to-end supply chain and sales operations with industry leaders such as Procter & Gamble, the Clorox Company. He's in the flavors and fragrance industry, including Givaudan, Food, the Live Kindly Collective, both domestic and in international forums. It is my pleasure to welcome you onto the show.
Thank you, Deb. Happy to be here.
So a little bit for my listeners, it's an interesting how the network works. Many, many years ago, maybe about, I would say about 8 or 9 years ago, he and I met. I was interviewing to be an employee at Givaudan, and he was part of that initial set of interviews for which he gave the thumbs up. Please join this company, for which I enjoyed 7 or 8 amazing years. But he moved on to another company and another to continue to do his amazing work. But I am grateful for the opportunity to have known him, been part of a great organization, but also to bring his story forward to you. So I would love for you to share a little bit about yourself personally and your career journey and how you impact organizations.
Sure. Thank you. Listen, when I see back at my career, I can only say that I've been blessed with having different opportunities and different exposures. I started my career in Procter & Gamble. That gave me a very solid background, a very solid mentality on how to drive high-performance systems, how greatness looks like. These companies that have these systems in place that really have mastered the way to drive performance. And I took a lot of their learnings in my career. Then I moved to different companies like Clorox, which is similar CPG mentality and the whole intent of drive efficiencies. But at the same time, not only drive efficiencies in the organization, but also build a lot of talent. Because the only way for these companies to be successful is to build talent. And I took that passion from them. On if you build a strong team in your career, if you can really drive, take the best out of each people in your team, you're going to be successful. And I continue working with that mentality as I progress with different companies. I went to Givaudan Flavors where we met. That was a great story. I remember that time. And that was a change from CPG to business. But at the end, the mentality is the same, right? I mean, how can you manage a good group of people, convert them in a very smart, efficient team, and take the best out of those teams? Now I'm in small companies. I've been doing my last few gigs. I've been in small companies. And I've been very blessed to have the opportunities to take organizations that are not performing at the level they should be performing and how to drive that change, how to inject that people, the mentality that we can always do better, we can always do a better job, we can always improve things, and try to take them to the mentality that we can be as good as the big companies if we work smart. On my personal side, I've always been a family man. I really enjoy a lot of time spending with my family. And that's part of who I am. I always put my family in a very important spot in my life. I spend my free time either with my family, spending time with my kids, spending time with my wife, or I'm a runner And I just finished my fifth half marathon in the last 5 years. So that's something that it keeps me going. That's a place when I release my stress. I keep going. And I'm really excited to be here. I hope I can share some of my background and help.
I absolutely am sure you can. But let's go there with the half marathon. What does it take to prepare? And, you know, have you ever had points during that process for which you want to give up? Like, where do you find the strength to keep going if it's challenging, or to better your personal record? Because those are challenging, very, very challenging types of events. What do you do to, you know, get the best out of it? Because they are physically challenging.
The good thing about a half marathon or a marathon is that it requires a lot of preparation, and it's a long-term goal. It's very similar to what you do in work when you drive continuous improvement. The way I see myself is I try to run 4 to 5 days a week just to keep myself in shape for the races. I always set milestones, how many miles I'm going to run for the week, what's the time I want to do in those weekly runs. And then I always have a training plan for the race, which I usually take 6 weeks before the race. And I have a very clear plan to get there. And yes, usually during the 8 or the 9 mile is when you say, oh my God, I still have 5 more to go. And it's when you have to find your strength. And to me, it's about, I have a clear mind. I have a clear goal. I'm always stretching for a specific time. And I'm always trying to get to that mentality that I have to get to the goal. Luckily for me, I have never quit in anything, and I've never quit in the middle of these races.
So there's so much in that. I wanted to start with that because I too have done half marathons. I am not an expert runner, but I also set a goal. I did the training plan to at least get ready to go that 13 miles. And I will tell you, around the 11th mile is grueling. It is very challenging. But I would turn on some music. I said, I'm not going to be defeated. I can see the finish line far off into the distance. I've come this far. I'm going to do it. If nothing else, it's being purely stubborn, but truly a feat. But it is a little bit about mindset and also the physical training. But I'm curious, because this is so important. We do these things in our personal life. We make sure we spend time with family. We go to baseball games, et cetera. So you talked about being clearly focused on the goal. Let's move this into business. We can have a plan. We can have a goal. But the business runs you sometimes. You have disruptions, customer complaints, the numbers are not there. How do you, as a leader, knowing that you're going to have these interruptions and things that you have to react to, still stay the course to ultimately reach the goals that you set forth for you and your team? How do you do that?
I think you, as a leader, you always have to be prepared for changes, and you always have to have a flexible mind. I mean, the goal stays the same, but the way to get there might be different given the situations that you have to face. If you are not flexible, if you are rigid, if you only think that there is only one way to get to a certain point, it's going to be hard for you to achieve and to get there. You have to have a clarity that there are different options, there are different situations, and you have to be able to react to those. Your team players are going to react differently. You have to be smart on how to manage them. And there are too many things that you cannot control that you have to make sure you have a plan B or a plan C to get to where you want to get. And you know what? You have to, in supply chain specifically, you need to know that things are going to go wrong, and it's okay. You need to continue going and find a way to drive that adversity.
Yeah. And it's also, how do you train your people to be able to think on their feet, manage those changes, come forward with options and proposals? Because in some maybe lower maturity organizations that are rather flat, you have adversity, you have these changes, the people will simply go to the leader and say, I've got a problem. And sometimes we do a disservice when we have a fantastic leader that knows how to solve the fires or the problems in the fires. We've not prepared the people. So I'm wondering, in your leadership, have you had to help develop the people in being flexible, agile, and manning the change? And what are some of those things that you have to teach them? Because we need to upskill them as well during challenging times.
I think you need to be consistent in letting them take decisions at the right level, and accepting that sometimes I'm going to make mistakes, but it's okay because we're all in this together. And if you make some mistakes, and we learn from the mistakes and we drive improvement, it's going to be okay. When things go wrong is when you tell people, listen, you can make decisions, But as soon as they make the first mistake, you take a very aggressive discipline measure against those people, because then you're going to not allow them to make decisions anymore. I think in order to allow people to learn to be flexible, to be confident, to feel that they're adding value, you need to have that consistency when you say, guys, we're all here to, I mean, I expect everybody to make the right decision at the right level. You need to make sure that there is tolerance for mistakes, and you need to work together through them.
Yeah, that's really, really good advice. And similarly, I also, when I coach that same type of skill, again, hopefully if you take a risk or take a decision, more times than not, you are going to be successful. But to sometimes increase that success, you may want to make sure you speak with other people around you that maybe have similar experience, just to either validate your decision that you want to take, or maybe consider an alternate way. Sometimes we are so good at being heads down, and they like to work in a silo, but the best decisions are made when you encourage them to reach out to other people and consider that, and at least put forth the best decision possible. So a lot of what you do, because you've had the opportunity to work in many different organizations, you're working in one right now where you've shared that they are going through a significant change, and sometimes you actually have to alter or change your leadership style. Tell me a little bit more about that.
Sure. The original plan of the organization I'm working with was to really aggressively drive growth towards a strong innovation. And there was an aggressive plan to drive innovation. They built an organization to drive that innovation. And they put my team to work right to find new suppliers, to find new co-manufacturers, to bring new materials, to add additional capability. So I had a team on a go, go, go mode that there is a clear mandate to bring all these things on board. Suddenly you get to work one day and you get the news that we're not going in that direction anymore. There is a big shift in leadership that they believe that this is the time not to drive that type of growth, but to consolidate our strengths and to focus on what we can do better and put that on hold. So how do you drive that? You put the brakes. How do you reorganize or right-size your organization, because there is going to be a big change? And once you do that, how do you keep your people motivated to the new, that this is okay, that this is the best way to go for the company? So as a leader, first you need to understand really where we're going before you start creating more confusion within your organization. So what I did is I really spent at the right time re-understanding and reshaping the supply chain organization, the strategy. And once I had it very clear from my end, and I also got pretty good clarification and alignment with the new leadership, then is when I went down and deployed the new strategy, the new way we're going to behave. But I spent a lot of time explaining the why this happened and the why we're doing this, and what's the benefit for the supply chain team, and how our life is going to be different and it's going to be better. Lots of people raise their concerns. Are we really going to survive? Is this? Are we really in a pretty bad situation? Is this coming? Why this is coming from? So I had to spend a lot of time not only explaining that to the reasons behind, but also bringing additional people to the table to talk to them and explain them why this is going on. So bringing the CFO and bringing the COO to show people that the ELT, executive leadership team, is aligned and there is a reason behind that went along with the team. So at the end, what you need to make sure is that your key players are not getting either demotivated or they're not starting to look for another job somewhere else, because you really want them. So how can you spend that time with them to get that going? And I think at this point, 2 months after the big change, I was able to put together that clarity in my team and refocus everybody. Of course, we went to some of right sizing, because if you're not going to drive innovation, you don't need all those resources, but it's part of the business, right?
You know, what I feel from that, and I also experienced this in another organization, was that through the process of you yourself as a leader gaining clarity and clarification, you then, after taking that pause, were able to come forward and explain to your team, as well as provide additional resources to answer their concerns. the whole impact of what you did was you showed respect for your people, empathy towards their concerns, because ultimately it's about maintaining those relationships, regardless if what we're doing now or we're doing something tomorrow or we change again in the future, people will always have your back because you focused on them first, not just the business change. And so that's really a powerful point that you make, that people will stay with you, people will trust you, people will follow you because how you made them feel.
I truly believe that to be successful in business, you don't have to be mean. You really need to respect everybody that works for the organization. People will always give you the best they have if you treat them with dignity and if you make them feel part of the solution. And I think that's the way I always go. My go-to modus operandi with people, because I truly believe that's a way to do it.
And I appreciate that. I also was with an organization where, again, it was a flavor company. And then there was a significant change. It involved downsizing people, ultimately, and closing a location. But what was most important was to explain why and keep the people focused and servicing the customer so there's no disruption. And we provided them all the resources they needed to not only bring us to the end of that business, but then respect on helping them to transition to their next role. Even now, I think those people just say it was great leadership. It was a great experience. Even some of them reach out to me, even though they're no longer working for that company. Such an important thing, helping others manage or manage through significant change.
I wanted to take a moment to remind you that a recent study showed nearly 60% of leaders feel depleted at the end of the day. And this feeling is a key indicator of burnout and makes it difficult to lead and inspire others. If you've ever experienced that restless exhaustion, you know why CEOs are amongst the most likely candidates for experiencing job frustration. I wrote The CEO's Compass, Your Guide to Get Back on Track, to confront those feelings and create a plan that is sustainable for you and your organization. I created a 7-point assessment that will help you figure out your problems in days, not months. And it includes so many resources, worksheets, videos, and much, much more. If this is you, please head over to my website, dropinceo.com, and click on my products, The CEO's Compass, and order yours on Amazon or other outlets. And now, back to the conversation.
Now, you yourself are a change person. You have been in a number of companies where you drop in as the leader and you have to assess what is needed and also then say, and this is the direction we must follow. But you have experience on the different levels of acceptance in the organization. Some people out of the gate will absolutely say, good, we love your leadership direction, we will follow. And then there are others that may not. So that, again, plagues leaders through and through. What's your approach when you see the different levels of acceptance in an organization when you drop in as the leader?
That's a great question, Deb, because the first advice from me is keep in mind that it's never one size fits all. I mean, every situation is different and every culture, not only in different organizations, but in the same organization, maybe in different states or in different countries, you need to really spend the right time to understand the culture that people are living in the place you're landing, right? Every place has a different culture. And you're going to find people in every place. You're going to find a group of people that, as you mentioned, the first thing they will say is, who's this guy to come and teach us how to do things? We've been doing this forever for a long time, and who's this new guy that's going to teach us this way? There's going to be a group of people that would say, "Oh, this is great! Finally, we have a new way of doing things." And there is people that would say, "You know what? Let's outlive this person. He's not going to last." And we've been here forever, and we've been seeing management changes. So I think you need to work with the three groups. It's very important to work with the three groups. Some of the ones that are not accepting your leadership are going to be testing you. Some of them are going to either decide to leave by their own, or you're going to have to make some tough decisions with them. But if you select a few, in that group, there is always a very valuable group of people that it's very important to invest time to convert them. If you can really convert these people to the new mentality, those are going to be your best advocates when you drive the change. So I really suggest people take the time to find those key players in that group to make sure you make the right investment, because those are going to be your most valuable change agents when you're trying to run that part of the change. always take advantage of the people that are welcoming you. Those are going to be always helpful. But make sure you really read them the right way, because some of them are maybe just playing the game, that just following what you say, and they're yes people. You need to make sure that you know every one of them, and you spend the right time to show them where you want to go, and make sure they understand, and they can really help you to drive the change. And the people that are going to outlive you, those are the first ones that I will try to get rid of them, because those are the most dangerous ones, because they will be always holding the change. They will always say, I'm not going to move in any direction. I'm just going to see what happens. And those are, for me, the most dangerous ones. You might find one or two that are valuable, but those are really dangerous, because they're going to be doing anything they can do to hold the change that you're trying to drive. I've been exposed to different types of organizations, as you mentioned, and I've seen that this is a good approach to drive the change. This is a very effective way to drive changes and build the right teams.
Have you ever, I got a question in my head, any of those people that are not right for the organization, you spend time with them, have you ever been able to convert them from being against what you're trying to do and bring them over to realize it's the right thing to do?
Yeah, I've done that a lot. I can give you a few examples in Jivaland, just to mention. All the maintenance department was totally against what I was trying to do. And at the end, as of today, I still have a LinkedIn chats with all of them, because they really appreciated the way we transformed the organization in the maintenance team. We gave them a totally different way of work. And at the end, they really, really loved it. So they really helped me with that. But I think it's a lot of, if they feel value, that they can add value to the change you're driving, and if they understand that there is some value for them and for the organization, that's going to be key, and that's going to be super powerful. So yes, I have been successful doing that several times.
So I appreciate your leadership style. It's one that a lot of leaders need to learn. And you've done it in so many different places. But now I want to just turn a little bit to you from an introspective perspective. What does a good day look for you at work? I know you have to handle a lot of change management, difficult decisions, but what does a good day look like for you, because you know things are working well?
A good day for me is when I see my people making the right decisions and delivering the right results without me having to be too much involved. Not because that means that I don't have too much to do, it's because I see that I empower them and things the way I design them to work, so they can do their work are working. So every day that I don't have to intervene in a tough decision or to make things work by myself is when I think it's a good work, because my team is working.
You know, one of the things, and again, this speaks to the type of leadership you are as well as others. Sometimes when leaders don't hear a lot of things happening, when it's too quiet, they wonder if they're still valued, and maybe they go down into the organization and start stirring things up and asking a lot of questions. But a true leader, if things are quiet, that's a good thing. That gives you time to start thinking about what's the next step for the organization and continue to be the leader versus maybe a firefighter.
I agree. And you know what? If you have the right KPIs in place and you follow performance with the numbers and you see the numbers going in the right direction and there is no noise from the organizational standpoint, that's a perfect state when you can really start thinking about what's going to happen in the next 3 to 5 years, because that's where we strategic leaders have to be thinking. So if you have your day-to-day working, the trends are where you want to be, and you see that organizational culture working in the right direction, then you can really focus on the strategic part.
So you keep giving me more material for me to poke around and ask more questions. You talked just now about KPIs, and obviously, if they're going in the right direction, you can rest a little bit and do more strategic thinking. But was there ever a time where you're doing all the right strategic work, putting the right people in place, the right processes, trying to make the improvements, but the KPIs were not quite where they need to be, and leadership is coming down on you and saying, when are we going to make those numbers? But you know it's going to take a little bit of time, that you want people to be patient for all the things to start happening. How do you manage that? Because there can be so much pressure on a leader to beat the teams to get the numbers when ultimately you're trying to build a sustainable organization.
And I think you just hit the nail, because that's, I think, the most difficult part of our role as supply chain leaders is how you manage the pressure from the top to avoid passing it to the organization that is really working the day to day, you have to be above how much pressure you can pass down and how much pressure you can pass up, because people are going to start feeling a lot of pressure if you're not giving them enough time for the results to come. So I think the best way to manage that is you need to make sure you are managing with transparency. The numbers are there. The trends should show that there is improvement. Maybe we're not getting as fast as people would expect, but if there is improvement and the trends are there, and you can share the why we need more time clearly with transparency without making crazy stories about it. There is always a good reason. There is always something that still needs to be fixed and takes time. So to me, it's all about communication both way. You need to communicate very clearly to your upper management to make sure they understand your strategy and that it takes time. But also make sure you can share the communication down to the organization to say, hey, there is some stress here that we need to try to move faster. And how you manage that healthy tension between upper management and the people in the floor, right?
And those are great opportunities when you are transparent with the people that report to you, because given that you're sharing a little bit of the stress with them, that's when innovation happens. And hopefully not trade-offs for doing the wrong thing, but ideas to either accelerate or maybe reprioritize the work to satisfy the needs of the business and the needs of the higher up. So really, really great advice. And such a great interview. And I am sincerely happy that you and I have finally been able to have this conversation for our listeners. But if there were a last few closing thoughts for leaders out there, what would that be?
I think the best advice I can give everybody is it's okay to receive feedback and ideas from your peers and your top management. It's great to be challenged every day, because sometimes we as leaders in supply chain, we believe that we've seen everything and we know exactly what's going on in our operation. But you just need somebody to ask a question and make you think, hey, there is something there that I might be missing. And what I don't like people is to feel or to be reactive or feel that, oh, why is the CFO asking me or telling me what to do? Why is the CEO thinks believe he knows to drive better supply chain than I do? It's not that they're doing that, it's just that they're asking the right questions for you to rethink, so you can re-challenge your team and redesign your strategy if needed. To me, that has been very valuable. I accept every question and every feedback that I get, because that makes me think again and reshape my strategy if needed.
Hobo, I am so happy that you have dropped in on the Drop-In CEO podcast. I hope our listeners have found this valuable, and I'm grateful that you and I have reconnected. So I just want to say thank you again for being a great guest, and I wish you continued success.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. It has been a pleasure to reconnect with you again.
Thank you for listening to the Drop-In CEO podcast. I hope you are inspired by our conversation and can apply what you heard to your business or career goals. If you found this episode valuable, please share this show with at least one friend who would find it useful and inspiring. Your support allows me to keep sharing insights and inspiration to leaders who are working their way to the C-suite. To connect with me or learn more about the Drop-In CEO services, go to my website at dropinceo.com. And until we meet, I wish you well and much success.